Oye, oye, oye.
Do you wonder what voir dire is? What is involved in the process of arraignment? And who was that Marbury fellow anyway? Welcome to Speaking Plainly, Breaking Down the Law, a collaborative series that will break down questions about the law into everyday language. Now, here are your hosts, criminal justice professor Dr. Christine Artello and public affairs librarian Nia Rogers.
Hi, Dr. Artello.
Hi, Nia.
When we last left Skippy, he was indicted by a grand jury in the federal system. So he goes to trial next, right?
Hold your horses. There is much to get done before we start the trial.
I'm just saying that on the TV shows, the trial's next.
Well, there are a couple steps first before we get to trial. An arraignment and then pretrial motions.
An arraignment is where they plea, right?
That is exactly right.
Okay, so what is the difference between the first appearance that we talked about and an arraignment?
A first appearance is expected to happen within 48 hours of the arrest, and the defendant generally doesn't have to answer any charges, generally because they don't have charges necessarily at that point.
Okay.
And which is why the right to an attorney has not attached yet. An arraignment may happen weeks or months after an arrest, and the defendant now has to answer the charges.
But they have an attorney attached.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So Skippy, who has been indicted, will have an arraignment and plea like not guilty or guilty or insane or whatever it is that you plea.
There are a couple other options as well. You could plead not guilty by reason of insanity.
Oh, okay.
Or nolo contendere. There you got a little French going. Which means that I do not contest the criminal charges, but I am not pleading guilty.
I don't understand what that means. Did he do it or did he not do it?
It means that he's not admitting any guilt, but at the same time, he's not contesting that the state has grounds for the charges.
Why would anybody do that?
Well, let's take Skippy. Let's say that Skippy has assaulted one of the park rangers. He could plead nolo contendere with permission of the court and receive his sentence. Let's say 6 months in jail and 2 years probation, as he really beat this guy. Then the park ranger sues Skippy for his medical bills in a civil action. The park ranger cannot use Skippy's plea of nolo contendere to prove that Skippy caused his injuries.
So the defendants are protecting themselves from future cases.
Or at least making the plaintiff work harder for their case.
Okay, what happens after arraignment?
So the defense counsel will file pretrial motions that decide how the cases should proceed fairly and according to the law.
Are there a lot of pretrial motions?
There can be, but generally there are a few common ones. Double jeopardy, speedy trial, change of venue, dismissal, discovery, suppression of evidence.
Okay, that sounds like a lot of pretrial motions.
Yeah. So, but let's talk about the most common ones today. So we'll talk about dismissal, discovery, and suppression of evidence.
I think we've talked about suppression of evidence before, haven't we?
Yes, we have. In the Miranda podcast, we talked about the court suppressing Miranda's confession because the court found the police violated his rights. Suppression is the remedy when the government violates your rights.
So if the police take something in a search against my rights, like they open a drawer and take something because it's not out in the open or whatever, mm-hmm. the government can't use it against me in court.
Exactly.
When a case has evidence suppressed, it makes sense that someone would file to dismiss the case, right, to avoid going to trial and get the case thrown out.
Exactly. If key evidence is suppressed and there's little else, the case may be dismissed by the judge. There are some other reasons to dismiss. Maybe because the facts don't show a crime has been committed. You don't have a body. There just is not enough evidence against the person. Generally, these types of motions are not successful, as most cases either have had a preliminary hearing or a grand jury indictment already.
Okay. So what is discovery?
Discovery is a relatively new American invention in criminal cases. Do you remember the Perry Mason series?
I love Perry Mason. However, I'm old, and probably many people listening to this are not old, so they may not remember Perry Mason.
Okay, so if you have time, pull up a Perry Mason episode. But Perry Mason is a defense attorney played by Raymond Burr who uses surprises in trial to discover the real culprits and make the innocent go free. If you don't know the show, you can stream it on CBS. It's a great one to take a look at to see how criminal cases used to go. Prosecution and defense would go into court and have very little idea of what would be presented.
Okay, so how do we get discovery then?
It was 1985.
Holy cow, that recent?
That recent. And it was through Brady versus Maryland. In this case, the prosecution withheld exculpatory evidence.
And I know you've explained exculpatory evidence, but I'm still a little gray. Can you explain it again?
Certainly. This is any evidence that shows that the defendant may not have done the crime. In Brady's case, his co-conspirator had actually admitted to the killing.
Yeah, well, that would be he didn't do it.
Yes. And if Brady's attorney had that document, he could have argued against the death penalty being used. Now, in another case, United States versus Bagley, the prosecution didn't tell the defense that the two main witnesses had been paid by the government. Through both of these cases, the court had made it a constitutional requirement for state and federal prosecutors to hand over any exculpatory information.
Anything else about that?
About half of the jurisdictions require that prosecutions hand over lists of any people with relevant information. So this is not direct exculpatory information, but is the witnesses the prosecution may be calling to help support their case. So if these witnesses end up having issues, then the defense is going to be able to do this. However, there's a flip coin to this. Roughly 14 states and jurisdictions do not allow this exchange, but they're concerned about witness tampering and intimidation.
Okay, intimidation I understand because I have lots of intimidating people in my life, my boss, my mom. But can you talk about witness tampering a little bit?
Certainly. This is when a defendant attempts to threaten or suggest bad consequences if you testify in a certain way. In this new social media world, this has become even more complicated. Consider how President Trump kept tweeting how wonderful Paul Manafort is. And then he also asked the DOJ to investigate a family relation to a witness. These actions are very concerning and are examples on the both extremes of witness tampering.
Oh, so you can witness tamper to the good. This guy's fabulous, and you could witness tamper to the bad. I want you to look into this guy's mother and put some pressure on him.
Exactly.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize you could do it to the good.
Well,
right? Like, I think this person's great. This person would never be guilty of anything. They would never hurt a fly. Look how fabulous they are.
Which is why they won't say anything bad against you.
Gotcha.
So, he's being so nice to me. Of course, I can't say anything about that thing that happened over there. That's really not relevant.
Okay.
Yes. Right. And also, it might be in the case of President Trump, there's a question of, well, he's being so nice to him. Does that mean if you don't say anything bad about me, I will make the other criminal cases go away through a pardon?
Oh. That's pretty clever, really, when you think about it. I mean,
yes,
it's not good, but it's clever.
Think of the sheriff out in Arizona. He was pardoned before he was even sentenced for contempt of court.
Well, that's kind of nice to know you're not going to, you know, end up.
Yes. Well, normally the pardon process usually goes through the criminal justice system before you're actually pardoned of the crime. So we know what actually happened and there has been some sort of community weigh-in with it. But in this case, and actually this was a question when Gerald Ford had pardoned Nixon for his, because there was no real examination by the people of what was happening and what had happened.
Which, I mean, clearly is not a good thing, because what you need, I mean, in order for a judicial system to work at its best, it needs to be transparent. And that, I guess, what you're talking about is ways that you can make it less transparent.
Exactly. And then it really comes into question as to whether or not we're truly getting to the truth, because that's supposedly what's happening, is you want to get to the truth about what things are happening in the case. So that's where we are concerned about this, and why witness tampering is so very bad, because it undermines our trust in the legal system.
Are there other evidence that works like this? Is there other evidence that works like that?
So most jurisdictions allow for discovery of scientific tests, physical and medical results, which is something else that's important. They also may run the test and then provide that same material to be run by defense counsel's scientific evidence so that they get the same results. So let's say that you have blood samples from the scene. So they're going to allow defense counsel to also examine those samples as well.
Oh, I see. Because it wouldn't be very fair if they said, we've got all the blood samples and we're not going to let you test them to also make sure that you agree that it's Skippy's DNA on this bloody shirt.
Yes.
I mean, if we just say we're keeping all the evidence and you have to take our word for it, well, then that could potentially be questionable later on, right? That could be questioned later on. So yes, it's better for them if they share that material so that all those tests can be run by both sides.
Yes, and that also becomes problematic when you have indigent defendants, because they're not able to pay for those tests.
Oh, you have to pay for the tests.
You have to pay for the tests. So this becomes a problem. So then you need to make sure that whoever's running the scientific tests is independent. And when they don't, and they have a thumb on the scale, Houston Lab, there was a major scandal there because they were finding things in favor of the police. So there's a real question when they had an independent lab look at the same things and go, how did you find that person's thumbprint matched? That fingerprint doesn't match.
Okay.
Yes, that's a major thing to do that. And there is some art to defining whether or not a fingerprint matches and stuff. So, yes. So that ends up being problematic. So
evidence is complicated, is what you're saying.
Very complicated.
Okay, so is that the end of most of the common motions?
The most common ones, that's the end of it.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So next time we'll talk about the other types of pretrial motions that are not as common.
Okay.
Okay.
This was Speaking Plainly, Breaking Down the Law. The discussion here is purely academic. For legal advice, please seek an attorney. Thanks to the workshop for technical assistance. Special effects by Isaac Hobson. Find more information at scholarscompass.vcu.edu.